cruising down the street in my 6-4. Blowing Kush smoke out the window. Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. We must also note, as multiple listeners have pointed out, Tyler Barron is at Louisville now. You know, I will say I did kind of completely forget about that, and I think it just goes to my larger point was hit the portal and I don't care anymore. But yeah, he went to Ole Miss, then Louisville came, and Louisville got like a defensive back to come up there too, right? So like they kind of poached a couple guys from Ole Miss who had poached a couple guys from us. But yes, Tyler Barron in Louisville. Thank you. Not at Ole Miss. Kind of got recruited over down at Ole Miss. So enjoy Louisville. That's even sadder. That's even sadder. Tyler Barron, not Byron Young. What do we miss this weekend, Sam?
Thanks, John. A electric weekend at the UFC for UFC 300. Just an unbelievable card. Highlighted by just an insane knockout from Max Holloway in the BMF title fight against Justin Gaethje. That one, obviously the BMF belt is always just the two of just the toughest guys on the roster normally and guys that are willing to kind of just scrap whenever. And you saw that Max Holloway broke Gaethje's nose in the first round of that fight. He just stayed in there for the next four, getting his ass kicked, and then caps it off with Holloway winning all four rounds of the fight, points down at the ground, 10 seconds left, and he's like, let's just go. Let's scrap for 10 seconds. Gaethje, they're throwing bombs, and Holloway lands one at the buzzer, walk-off KO. Unbelievable.
That was awesome. Yeah. I didn't see it live, but I watched that afterwards. I have not seen one like that. That's a last second knockout. That was awesome.
I've been watching UFC for a while. That was easily the best knockout I've seen ever.
Now, that one got everyone really fired up, and I saw the clip. I didn't buy the pay-per-view. I don't know if you guys bought the pay-per-view or whatever. But
I just stream it normally.
Don't admit that. They'll come get you. UFC will come and arrest you. They crack down on that. They will get you. The feds are going to be kicking down the doors of our new studio. Please note that was Sam that said that, not me. I saw the clip on social media.
Where is this Sam Beard gentleman?
But I saw that it had championship on it, and it was five rounds. I didn't realize it was just the BMF championship, though. That makes it a little less cool. I thought it was an actual belt that mattered, not one that they just kind of made up to try to sell a Nate Diaz fight.
No, that one was... That was better than the title fight.
Well, no, that's fine. The knockout was great, and yeah, I mean, I know Holloway and is it Gaethje or Gaethje? I always
Gaethje.
Thought it was,
it's Gaethje. Weird spelling, though. Yeah,
Gaethje. Those are both names I know, and I know they have been championship contenders in the past. But I thought maybe there was a championship on the line that actually was like a real one, not just to the toughest guys. Although like
Holloway will get a championship fight after this one
for sure.
Yeah,
and people want to watch him and. But it does make sense that whenever you do hold that title and you are in that title match, quote unquote, that like you do have to give the people what they want at the end. You do got to go throw hands, and that makes it make a little bit more sense.
That was just so badass being up 4-0. Like normally in the UFC, if you're like winning a fight that that clearly, it's just like, all right, final 10 seconds, I'm gonna run around the ring and just hold my hands up. And he was like, no, screw it, I'll put it all on the line.
How about when once he knocked him down? I loved his gesture too. Like he looked at the crowd and put both hands out down to the guy on the ground, going, are you not entertained?
He wanted that knockout bonus. He wanted that best fight bonus. So like both, like the loser gets the best fight bonus too, right? Not just the winner of the fight.
I think if you're in the fight, you get the fight of the night bonus.
Get knocked out, that sucks, but maybe you get a little fight of the night bonus there to go on top of it. But yeah, like on one hand, I understand what you're saying. Like, hey, if you have a 4-0 lead, like maybe take it easy. On the other hand, like if you have a 4-0 lead, it's because you've been kicking the guy's ass. So it's a little bit easier to be like, hey, come throw hands with me after you've beat somebody up for like 20 minutes. Like
Gaethje's got like one knock, he's got one punch power though. Like that's a guy that nobody ever is like willing to do that with.
Sure, that's fine. But if I've beaten somebody up for 24 minutes and 50 seconds, I'm not going to be too scared of him. And then, like a career highlight there. I mean, that's as good of a knockout as you'll ever have. Like, that'll be on every one of Holloway's highlight films from now until the end of time. Mm-hmm. So it was a low risk, but obviously a very, very high reward. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And then also you had a couple other stars, right? That woman making her debut, people say she's the best woman fighter in the game right now, right?
Yeah. She just like
What was her name?
I think it was Holloway Harrison or something like that.
No, not Holloway. That's what we're I saw the video of Nunez.
Kayla Harrison.
Yeah, I saw the video of Nunez watching her post fight, waiting for her to call her out, and just kind of, it seems like we're headed towards that, and that'll be something that gets the mainstream watching. I'll watch that. Nunez is a star that's big enough that I care about that she crosses over and will get me maybe not buying the fight, but getting me somewhere out to watch it.
Mm-hmm. And then. You know, obviously in that the big title fight, you had Alex Pereira and Jamal Hill. He had a big knockout there. It was another great moment where, like, Pereira got hit in the cup, I guess, and the ref was going to stop it, and he called a timeout. Pereira just puts his arm away, and he, like, shoves the referee away. He's like, oh, I got this. They put the fight back on, and then just immediately after that, he just knocked him out. It was a really great card.
Champ. Was he the champ? He held onto the title?
Yeah, retained the belt. Retained the belt. Are you a UFC guy, John, being a WWE guy?
I told you before, I got into UFC a lot during COVID, but then there was that one fight night, man, where I was on the wrong side of four decisions. And, like, everyone on the internet was agreeing that, like, there's something weird going on with the officiating. And even Dana talked about it afterwards. And I was betting on it. I was like, never again. I was like, I'll watch certain fights now. Like, I really like – although he hasn't fought. I had our favorite fighter, and he hasn't fought, like, in a year. I loved Chimaev.
Oh yeah,
the new destroyer. Like I loved watching him during.
Nobody wants to fight him.
Yeah, and like then he got sick the one time, but like he's the guy I like watching fight more than anything. Like
he's a Terminator.
Yeah, him winning two fights in 8 days or 7 days during COVID, or maybe it was 2 weeks. Like, but doing that was absurd because
got hit like twice.
Yeah, like I loved watching him, and he was always an easy money making thing. And I'm waiting for him to fight again, and he just won't fight again.
Yeah. He might fight this summer a little bit.
There are certain names I'll watch, but I don't really buy the pay-per-views. It takes a lot for me to buy those.
Yeah. I guess last UFC news here, after the fight, Dana White also announced that Conor McGregor is officially coming back. So they're fighting the McGregor and Michael Chandler fight is official for late in June this summer.
He said he wanted to fight, what, 8 times this year, I think is the quote McGregor had.
Said that?
Yeah, I think so.
I doubt that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you can fight one more, if you can have like 1 year where you just grind and go crazy and make like $20 million or whatever it is, like.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Seems to have a lot of fun on his yacht, though.
I'd rather just box if I was McGregor. Just make $10 million to box.
Yeah. Some basketball news. Mark Pope yesterday introduced to Kentucky, and Kentucky sold the thing out. They introduced Mark Pope, had him, you know, pretty much sold out Rupp Arena in there. They bring out the national title team. They come, have him come off the bus last, basically, with everyone coming in there. It was, I guess it's an impressive performance for a press conference to get put on. But it felt like Kentucky fans were acting like they won the national championship last night as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I thought it was pretty cool. However, you know, I get what they're doing. Cal had done a fair amount of alienating old players and the fan base. So I think that's what Pope's trying to control right now, that and putting a roster together. You know, he's the true test will be next fall when they're on the court. But I think he's doing the right things. That's all you can do right now. I thought it was a pretty cool entrance. And the fact, hey, say what you want, the fact that they sold out Rupp Arena and they had to turn people away. There were that many people waiting to get in. They definitely love their basketball. It is definitely like the corollary to the, you know, to our football fans, in my opinion. It was pretty impressive in that regard. But they won a press conference, basically. That's it.
And they were overcompensating. I understand the statement they're making, but to me, I thought it was embarrassing. Going out of your way to try to overcompensate because the hire is so underwhelming that you're having to like go out and treat it like, oh, wow, you did it. We're going to really support this guy. We love him so much. We actually totally believe it. We're going to buy into it, and we're so excited. Like that was a statement they were trying to make to the country that actually we're not mad at all. We love this guy. Okay. All right. If you say so. We get it. You can rally and you love basketball, but like, you weren't excited about the Mark Pope hire.
I would love to see all the fans that like entered the stadium. They have to delete their Mark Pope hired tweets.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see it. Yeah. I want to check their history. Yeah. And like, I don't know. Is that the same as trying to pack like an orange and white game? Is that the same as trying to pack the spring game when you're like, hey, we need 60,000 people here for recruits? Like, are they doing that as a fan base to try to show like recruits they're unified? Like, is that the mission there? Because if I'm a recruit, like that's considering Kentucky, it's not about, well, they had a lot of people show up to the press conference.
I think it's all the above. I think it's recruits. I think it's fan base. I think it's also, you know, it's an ongoing battle now is trying to get as much money as you can from boosters for NIL, all that stuff. I do think they're trying to say nothing to see here. We're in, you know, we've got it under control. I get that. But, you know.
When you describe it that way, I couldn't help but think of like Joel Osteen and the mega church. Like, hey, yeah. Let's get everybody in here. We're going to play some music and celebrate, and then we're going to pass the offering around for NIL money.
Yeah.
Everybody, break out your checkbook. We need 7% of your salary, please. Whatever you made this week, please give what you can. We're going to pass the plate around for Mark Pope because, as you see, he's going to need some help here talent-wise. We got to keep these boys here, and if you liked what you saw – and you want your soul saved, please give what you can.
I gotta say, I can't imagine a coach coming in and exuding much more energy than him. It was a little like a calm down, man. I mean, he is over the top.
I'm not saying it just because he's bald, but Steve Ballmer energy is what he has. Like, and I don't know if that's going to work unless they win big. Like, the hooting and hollering is fun now, but that hooting and hollering is going to seem pretty dumb if they come out and go, like, you know, 9-9 in the SEC or whatever it is. Are we going to play 20 games next year with Oklahoma and Texas coming? Have we said?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that, actually.
I don't know if we'll add two games or if we'll...
You would think so. I mean, I'm just... The only example I can point to is the Big Ten moved to 20 games when they expanded, so...
Okay. So, yeah, like, go 10-10... All that hooting and hollering will seem kind of dumb. But, yeah, I get it. Smile through the pain. Show a unified front. Speak it into existence. All those things.
The thing they're watching closely, too, is, you know, when they unloaded that bus, you know, Jeff Shepard was on there because he was part of that 98 title team. That was what those – it was all old players from that team. And there was some comment that Pope made in the press conference about these players, you know, these coaches, we're going to shepherd this team. And then he stopped and looked, you know, he was getting that for effect and place went nuts. And, you know, they shoot, you know, point to a camera shot where Rex Chapman is, you know, putting his hands on Shepard's shoulders, like, come on, man, you know, there's obvious pressure. They want to try to keep Reed there.
It was a political pep rally. I mean, that's all it was. It was a political pep rally. It was a mega church vibes. Like, they can pretend like they're okay with it if they want. It was just an event that they all wanted to get together and pat themselves on the back and say, look at Big Blue Nation. Look at what we do. We're so excited. This is going to be magical. This guy's home. Let's all believe in him. Like, I wasn't moved. I rolled my eyes. I scoffed and said, do these people not have something better to do?
That many people missing the Masters? Come on.
Would you have rolled your eyes if Tennessee had done something like that?
I wouldn't have gone. So, like, yeah, I would have. I roll my eyes at a lot of things Tennessee does. I don't always vocalize them, but I roll my eyes at a lot of things. Like, Danny's a showman, and, like, you know, Danny makes a big portion of the fan base happy, but, like, a lot of stuff he does makes me roll my eyes. But, like, I understand it's a part of the job. So, like, I'm not blaming Kentucky for necessarily doing it, but, like, I don't think it changes the fact that the hire was underwhelming and that they're all disappointed with the hire deep down.
Yeah.
I get the need to do it, but, yeah, no, I think it, like, there's plenty of stuff that we've done in the past that I've rolled my eyes at the time that people loved. Like, I saw a graphic over the weekend. It was like, Butch Jones, most followed coach in all of college football. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at the time, I was like, this is really embarrassing. Please delete this. This is cringy. But at the time, a big portion of the fan base was like, yes, the recruits are going to see this. We're so behind it. Vol Twitter. And, like, that was something. Not the same, of course, but, like, something I'm just like, this is embarrassing.
Kentucky did that, too. Did you see it or no?
No.
Some account was like, oh, like 24 hours after hiring Mark Pope, he already has more Twitter followers than Dan Hurley.
Yeah, like, okay, who cares?
I'm thinking back to Butch now, too. Remember, it was an orange and white game where he had the microphone on the whole time, and he's like, talking and yelling. And
I don't want to go down a full list of all the embarrassing things that he did because, the whole, we got a huge special announcement, be there, and it's like, hey, permanent captains. And I was like, okay, no one cares. And the Peyton pass, we're going to reenact the Peyton pass. And people are like, is Peyton Manning coming? No, it wasn't. It was just some kid came out and tried to make the throw, like, they constantly did things like that to try to pack the orange and white game because they cared about inflated stuff like that. And guess what? It didn't matter when it came time to actually play football. They can hoot and holler for Mark Pope all they want. Guess what? Not going to matter the first time he loses a January conference game to some underachieving team. Ryan Shumpert, RTI, coming up next. We'll do a little RTI read and react as we'll continue to stay on kind of some Tennessee sports. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach?
All right, let's do a little RTI read and react, our weekly chat with Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. Ryan, top of the morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're well.
Yeah, of course. Good morning. Happy Monday.
What's your biggest takeaway coming out of the orange and white game?
I think it's obviously a game that's kind of hard to have too many takeaways, but I think probably the thing that stood out to me the most was just the new receivers, whether that's Mike Matthews. Obviously, he had the long, I think it was 63-yard touchdown in the first half, and that was a really impressive adjustment he kind of made on the ball, or whether it's Chris Brazell, the Tulane transfer, I thought had a really good game, and I left the spring game feeling much better or impressed maybe by those guys and maybe feeling like, I don't know, I feel like this is something people say every year, and I've usually kind of fought it off, but it just feels like this receiver rotation is going to have to be bigger next season than it's really been at any point in Josh Heupel's era.
Anything from Nico to make you think any differently about him? Because the offense was stuck in the mud to come out of the first quarter, but that's to be expected. The spring games always feels like the defense gets off to an early start. I thought Nico showed some flashes in the second quarter, but overall wasn't overly impressed, but nothing out of the ordinary.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Tennessee's first team offensive line didn't have three of its interior offensive line starters out there. I think John Campbell even was pretty limited in what he did. And Tennessee's defensive line is expected to be the strength of the team. And, really what Nico maybe does best is his ability to create when things break down in the pocket. But in a spring game, when it's two-hand touch, kind of take that ability away a little bit. So Nico, that first-team offense wasn't overly impressive, but I don't think it necessarily said a ton about Nico in a negative way. I think it was more just about the circumstances of Tennessee's offensive line struggling to handle Tennessee's defense line.
Morning, Ryan. Question for you back to the receivers, because I was watching that, and I was same way. I was really struck by Matthews. But my question is, you mentioned Matthews, you mentioned Brazell. We know Chaz Nimrod, who we love saying his name, got a touchdown. And you think also about the ones that didn't play, Squirrel and Brew. And is there, I guess, from your perspective, and we know that this offense is kind of high volume from the standpoint of play calls, et cetera, is there enough room for all of these guys to eat, do you think?
No, I really don't. Because, even if you go, Tennessee were to go 60, which would be really unheard of, I'd throw Braylon Staley in there, early freshman receiver who didn't play in the spring game either. I've been impressed by him, too, from what I've seen at practice, and it feels like to me he has a great chance to be Squirrel White's backup in the slot. Obviously, Nimrod can kind of play inside and outside, and Nimrod would probably be ahead of him in a depth chart, and then maybe the way things would fall that Nimrod would be moved back to the slot, but I don't really think there is, and I think that'll be an interesting spot to potentially watch today and in this week as the transfer portal opens. Does one of those Tennessee receivers jump in? Because it does feel right now like there's just too many mouths to feed there.
a part of the weekend was Tennessee basketball recruiting the transfer portal heavy. A lot of big names on campus that Tennessee was looking at. You had our boy Darlin Stone from Hofstra. You had the Belmont transfer. Is that Cade Tyson? Is that correct. His name?
Cade Tyson.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the latest on them coming out of the weekend?
Yeah, Darlington Dubar is a guy that Tennessee was putting the full court press on, and I think they feel really good about that one. Coming out of his visit, I would put Tennessee to be the favorite to land him right now. Cade Tyson, I think, is going to be a lot harder to land. He's going to go to North Carolina this coming weekend, and then we'll see what he does after that. I know Kansas and UConn were two names that were thrown out there with him, too. So they're in deep waters with Tyson. That's going to be a hard one. They do have some connections there because they recruited his older brother, I believe it was Hunter Tyson, who ended up going to Clemson and I believe is now in the NBA or in the G League, one of the two. So they do have some prior connections to Tyson, but that's going to be a much harder one to land. But we'll see how that goes in the next week or so as he takes a few more visits, or at least one more visit.
Hey, Ryan, have you heard any more development on there was talk of this kid from Charlotte, Igor Milicic, coming in, maybe tomorrow for a visit. Is that still on tap? Because I know that there was maybe some chatter that, similar player to D-Stone. I mean, size is a little different, but still the same kind of player. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Is that still on target for him to visit tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's, kind of in flux. Or, what I was told was that if Tennessee lands Dubar, that Milicic would not come in for a visit. But obviously the plan is for him to visit on Tuesday, and we're sitting here on Monday morning, and Dubar hasn't committed. So, at this point, I think that visit is still, on tap. He still plans to come in, but obviously, like anything in the transfer portal, that could change pretty quickly.
Do you have a breakdown? Because Tennessee's in the mix with four or five guys. Do you have a good idea of who's getting prioritized? Do we have a wish list, an order on that, or is it just kind of also fluid that it changes from day to day?
I think you've got to have a wish list at certain spots. I mean, just right there, I feel like Dubar is ahead of Milicic. I feel like I don't know what you'd say the wish list is in terms of Cade Tyson, who's really more of a true three. More similar, he's kind of in between a guard and a post guy, like a stretch four like Dubar, as opposed to maybe a Roddy Gale, the Ohio State guy. I know that Mike Wilson had it, that they're trying to get a visit lined up with him this week. It feels like you kind of know the top guys at some certain spots, and that at a couple of those spots where a couple of names, I feel like the order is somewhat clear. But right now, it feels like outside of point guard, we're recruiting just about every position in the portal. So while there is a lot of names, it does kind of feel like it's still spread out as, where to what position all those guys play.
Yeah, this Roddy Gale one, because I saw Mike's article too, and that one kind of – well, we sit here thinking we're dialed in and we hear about all these players, and that one came out of nowhere for me, but it just underscores what you were just saying. I mean, these guys – the coaching staff has targets, right? And, it's not their job to share them with everybody, but that one, did that kind of surprise you? I mean, not necessarily. He looks like a good player. I'm just saying that it was just not a name I had heard.
No, I hadn't heard that name either before Mike's report. And I think maybe the thing that's intriguing about him is just the fact that he's just a sophomore. And so many of these guys Tennessee has been targeting is who's going to be super seniors next year, or at the very least are veterans. I guess Tyson would be in the same boat where he's a junior too. It feels like that's the tough part of this now, especially when Tennessee's having to recruit a bunch of guys and they have a bunch of roster spots to fill out. Is Rick Barnes talks about it all the time. You're attacking this stuff in the off season to be the best that you can be next season, but there is also a fine line of wanting to set yourself up with some multi-year guys too, that lends you to potentially having success and those guys being able to grow in your program too, which obviously is something that Barnes and Tennessee like. So to me, that's maybe the most intriguing thing about a guy that averaged 13.5 points a game in the Big Ten last year.
Talking with Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. I saw Jemai Meshack go through the Vol walk. I saw him there saying that Rocky Top is home sweet home. We did not see Tobey Awaka, who of course is in the transfer portal. What's the latest on Tobey Awaka?
I think returning is still in play for Awaka. I believe that he's going to go through the process. He's probably going to go on some visits. He's going to talk to other schools. So I don't expect anything imminently, but like you kind of have to today, and obviously he's already entered the portal, but I think Tennessee's going to be recruiting Awaka. They're going to be recruiting their own roster, and they're certainly not ruling out the possibility of him coming back. And to me right now, that feels like Tennessee's, you talk about the biggest priority at the center spot in the portal. To me, the biggest priority right now for Tennessee, it seems like Awaka. But and while I think that's in play, I think that's a possibility, I'm not necessarily expecting anything imminently on that front either.
Yeah, we saw the Roddy Gale Jr. name pop up from Ohio State. He's a 6'4 guard. We had, you know, Milicic. We've got him. We got D-Stone. We got Tyson. All those guys are, you know, guards slash wings. I know Milicic is 6'10 and kind of a power forward, but haven't seen any big men, you know, get linked to Tennessee in the portal yet. So that makes me think that they better really figure things out with Awaka, or that they think they can at least, because we haven't had any of those names surface yet, unless I'm missing anybody. Am I?
No, you're not. And that's been something of note to me as well. That feels very interesting that you haven't seen any names pop up. And you're right, Milicic, who's 6'10", you would think is, all right, maybe a four who can play some five. You know, I was told he's really more of a 4-3 guy. He is not a true center. He's not a guy that's going to be able to protect the rim or play in the interior. So you're right. I will say the positive side of that there is this, at least in the transfer portal era, which is only a couple years long, this does feel like the deepest post group that there's been. So maybe if you miss out on the top couple guys, which it doesn't feel like Tennessee's a major player for any of those guys at this point, there's a possibility that you could still land some pretty competent players or some players that you feel like can come play 20 minutes a game. But you also wouldn't take any of those guys over Tobey Awaka either at this point.
Hey, Ryan, one more name, then we can probably put a bow on basketball as far as we know, is, and I haven't heard it recently in the last week or so, was Chaz Lanier. Is he kind of off the radar, do you think, at this point?
Well, he's not in the transfer portal, so in that sense, he's off the radar. I mean, I think, you know, we'll see what happens there. If he were to hop in, I'm sure Tennessee would be interested, as would a number of teams, because he's such a high-level scorer. I mean, I think you saw that last week in relation to Dubar. There was that list of, I think, the 10 guys who had the highest offensive efficiency rating in college basketball last year, and both Dubar and Chaz Lanier were on that list. So as Tennessee continues to, it feels like they really target offensive-first guys in the portal, I imagine that, again, the Vols would be interested there, as a number of teams would if he does end up entering the portal. But as of now, he's going through the NBA draft process, and he's a grad transfer too, so that could linger on longer. He doesn't have to enter the portal before that May 1st deadline. He could enter it after that since he's a grad, and you know, that could potentially be one to watch later on down the line if he does decide to enter the portal.
Yeah, you just answered my last question on that. So May 1st is really when the window closes for most all of these guys, right?
Yep.
Okay. Anything you're working on this week, Ryan?
No, it'll be a busy week. We'll have some baseball mid-SEC play takeaways kind of today, and some questions looking at things in the halfway point. I'm planning on going to Lexington this weekend to cover that series, and we'll have everything. It'll be a big transfer portal week for basketball and football, with it opening up today, too, for the football program. So plenty of stuff on all three sports.
How much have you looked into Kentucky baseball at this point in the season? I mean, I know their record is really good, but are they legitimate? Is this a series that Tennessee on the road should still expect to take 2 out of 3 in, or is Kentucky as good as their record shows? I mean, I know they're not going to be quite as good as their record shows, but are they a legitimate top-level SEC baseball team?
Yeah, I guess just going back to your first question there, is I haven't done a ton of research on them. Okay. I mean, my thought has kind of been they're not that good. They're not that good, but they keep on winning. So at some point, they're obviously pretty darn good. No matter who they're playing in SEC play, I know it's been a little bit of a softer schedule to be raking up wins the way they have. So I think the goal should be to win two out of three. You know, I sit here on Monday, I would probably pick Kentucky to take two out of three in that series. But warm weather in Lexington this weekend, I think, would be, and which it's supposed to be, I think would be really big for Tennessee, because this is a Kentucky team that plays a lot of small ball. And obviously we know this is a Tennessee lineup that is very, very dangerous and has a lot of power, and warm weather lends to them having a potential big weekend.
Okay. Be honest. Better first pitch, Kim Caldwell or Dalton Connect?
Well, Dalton Connect, you know, they're not playing the same game. Dalton Connect's first person I've seen in a long time. First one this year who threw it from the rubber, which I was pretty impressed by. But, and I would say you take that out, his throw is maybe slightly better. He was a little bit in the batter's box, a little outside. I think Caldwell was a little high and inside. But, you know, no one bounced it this weekend. So I think good throws all around. But I got to give DK the nod because he threw from the rubber.
Ryan, appreciate the time, as always. Talk to you next week.
Yep, sounds great. Thank appreciate you, it, guys.
Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com, RShump00 on X. If you want to give him a follow. Going to have some coverage this weekend live and in Lexington. Sam, great job by you. That segment, send us to break. It is the morning show here on Fan Run Radio.
The first annual. Speed so fast, I feel like I was drunk. City
lights lay out before us, and your arm feeling nice wrapped around. The segment is brought to you by Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. If you are a business owner, a club director, a member of a social or religious organization, and you have a logo, and you need merch to help represent your brand or your mission, check out Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. You have a logo, they have a solution. From custom apparel to headwear and promotional items, Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs, made right here in East Tennessee. Be sure to give them a call for all of your logo needs. 865-966-3434. That's 865-966-3434. Coming out of the weekend, were you surprised that Tennessee did not land a commitment out of the transfer portal for the basketball team? Because I remember on Friday us saying we hoped that we would be talking about a big series win in baseball and a big commitment or two for the basketball team. You got the sweep. You broke out the brooms. You beat LSU. You took care of business there. The basketball team, on the other hand, did not come out with any commitment. Instead, came out a little bit more muddled, as the Roddy Gale Jr. name popping up from Ohio State made me think that they don't feel like they're in as good of a position with some of these guys as they maybe did at a different point last week.
Yeah, I think maybe it's what Ryan was referring to as well, that, you know, they have tiers, right? And we were definitely, excuse me, of the mind that D-Stone was in the bag almost. That's kind of the scuttle we were hearing. And here we are Monday, and there's still no commitment. And it makes you wonder, heard a little bit about some back and forth, but that could be also that DeBar's camp is trying to, you know, maximize what they can get in return. And as we've said, it's not just about playing time. It's also about NIL money, everything else. So it's one of those, it's a fine line. There's things we hear, and then, as I've said before, there's things we really just don't know. And so some of it we're just going to need to wait and see. But the good news is the timeline's, you know, compressing with each passing day. So something's going to have to give, and we'll learn more. I still feel optimistic there's going to be some meaningful commitments here, maybe in the coming days. We'll just have to see. But, it's a bit of a roller coaster right now. And you mentioned it in the last segment, and Ryan concurred that maybe some of the heaviest recruiting that's portal related involves someone who is, you know, has been on our roster. You know, that's a key one too with Tobe.
Do you have a day in mind? Because, like, to me, if we get to like Wednesday afternoon and we don't have any news on a lot of these guys, I'm going to, I want to say freak out. I won't be like pulling my hair out. Save your joke. because, you know, I trust Rick Barnes and the coaches to put together a roster. But, you know, I was expecting to hear some news Saturday and Sunday, you know, maybe a Sunday afternoon commitment whenever you're, you know, you're getting ready to leave town, and we didn't get that. And now I'm looking like, okay, if I don't hear anything about Wednesday on some of these guys, I'm going to be a little pessimistic, a little worried.
Yeah, I would agree. I think all the vibes were indicating not only were we having that expectation, but then we open up on Saturday morning or around lunchtime, and you see that social video of Jamai saying, you know, in not so many words, hey, I'm here. And so that feels good. And then we've heard some rumors, and we were the ones that talked about it too, that there was a real possibility of maybe Tobe was going to come back once the ADU announcement came out. That's still in play. So yeah, you know, then you're feeling good. You got the vibes, and it's like, okay, we're going to hear some news. I would say Wednesday is a pretty good line of demarcation, I would think, because after that, Milicic has been here and we've completed those visits. Don't know about Gale when he's coming.
Yeah, I mean, even on Saturday morning, I had gotten some rumblings from people that follow it way closer than I do that you know, Carolina's a little nervous, that Carolina thinks that maybe Tennessee is going to lock down Cade Tyson on his visit and that he wasn't actually going to make it to Chapel Hill to visit. I don't know if they had some intel or, like, you know, they had an idea of what Tennessee's NIL was offering, or if they just saw the pictures of him and Darlin Stone on the Vol walk having the time of their lives. You're like, hey, he might not make it here this week. But then, yeah, you get through the weekend with no real new news. Like, the latest on Awaka that I saw was like, hey, yeah, he's definitely not closing the door, and it's still probably likely that he ends up back at Tennessee, but he's going to test the market and just kind of give a couple extra days to have some of these offers roll in and some guys to evaluate him. With Darlin Stone, it was talked about that it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to end up at Tennessee this weekend. And I don't know if that led to Tennessee's collective lowballing him on some salary stuff and him holding out, wanting a couple extra $1,000. I don't know, but I know we're here on Monday morning and we don't have an answer yet. And that surprises me a bit, actually.
We should try to call him.
D-Stone?
Yeah.
So. Hey, can you walk us through the process right now? Are you just screaming, show me the money, into the phone and saying, no, more money? Are you needing an assurance of what position you're going to play? Because, like, everyone keeps talking about him and Milicic and those guys kind of being interchangeable or and whatnot, but, like, I see Darlin Stone always listed as a guard. So, like, I know he's 6'8", but, like, people keep saying, like, he could be our four. Like, I don't really see that in what little I've watched of him and like, you know, the stats I just peruse and just reading his bio and stuff.
It makes you wonder if the 6'8's really 6'8".
That's okay.
You know how this gets inflated sometimes, and that's another thing I may have been hearing is that
he's not quite 6'8".
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, either way, like, I mean, when you shoot just the number of threes he shot, that means you're not going to be playing the four necessarily on offense. I guess the question is more so like, can you do it on defense? And I'm going to guess you can't if you're at Hofstra, because if you're 6'8 and can play, can guard big men and shoot threes, chances are you're not going to transfer out of Hofstra. You're going to transfer to the NBA if you're that guy. You right. know what I mean? Because he shot, what, 40% from three on over five attempts for the season. And if you're actually 6'8 and can do that, you're not really transferring in college. You're probably testing the draft water. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if that was a couple inches inflated, which, you know, who isn't guilty of that from time to time? We've all lied a couple times, you know. 6 foot.
Sam's always saying 6'7 for him, and that's, you're tall, but geez, it's a little much.
Yeah. Now, Cade Tyson, like, that's one that I'd pretty much had, I don't want to say written off heading into the weekend, but I was like, hey, he's going to Carolina. Like, it makes too much sense to go to Carolina. But then, yeah, like on Saturday, I saw that Carolina people are worried, threatened by Tennessee. I was like, okay, here we go. And then, nope, we get out of the weekend and feel like it's Carolina there. Just looking briefly at the Roddy Gale guy, I don't want this guy.
I don't either.
Yeah, like to me, like that's that name popping up, unless he's like an ace defender that I don't know about. But like just looking at his stats, his shooting, and some of his game log stuff, like I'm good on not getting this guy.
I'd rather go try and find some like diamond in the rough high school guy than get him.
I would rather give every minute to Cam Carl. Like, yeah, sure, I don't like between Mayshak and Carl, like and Zakai, like unless you're just whiffing on everybody in the transfer portal, like if you're going to miss out on everybody, and maybe that name's just there to try to get the leverage back on Tennessee side of like threatening Darlingstone of like, hey, like you know we're looking at other guards too. It's not just Tyson and you. It's Tyson, you, and also this guy from Ohio State. He's pretty good. But yeah, like when I look at this guy, like it doesn't move the needle for me at all. 13.5 points a game, but 45% from the field, 28% from three. Nah. Unless he's just like the best defender in the Big Ten, which maybe he is. I don't know. I know Ohio State wasn't very good at basketball this year, so he can't be too good. But yeah, unless he's just like a Jamal Mayshak level of defender, I don't want him.
Yeah, there's it's interesting because, again, that guy kind of, for me, came out of nowhere. I don't think any of us really had heard much about him until that popped up. It was just curious. It was so different than the players that, again, the ones we've talked about that are very more wingy, you know, and maybe a little more height and a little more size. And to me, that's what I feel we need.
Well, he's also the only Power 5 guy that we've been linked to, too, right? The only guy from, like, an established school. And I know Ohio State basketball hasn't been good, but, like, it's not like you're trying to find somebody to step up a level. This would be you taking on somebody at a school. I don't know, like, if his level, he's able to even demand any money in the portal, or if he's just like, hey, I'm trying to find a better program to play at and showcase. I don't know, but, like, that was unique, too, because, yeah, you're trying to find size and shooting.
Yeah.
Which is the most valuable thing in basketball, size and shooting. If you can find that in a combination, like that's how you build great basketball teams. So like I do appreciate Tennessee's approach there, but size shooting, then all of a sudden 6'4" and can't shoot. And I'm like, huh, what the hell's going on here?
Right. I'll tell you, and again, if I guess it might be kind of case closed if D-Stone comes in and the other guy can't defend well, but those highlights of Miličić, not gonna lie, those are fun to watch. He looks offensively really skilled, but again, he's got to be able to play some D a little bit at least.
Is the Ohio State Gale Jr. stuff, is that, not to be confused with Gale Jr., is that Tennessee saying, hey, we need another guy that can handle the ball, we need another point guard, because right now Zakai's the only point guard on your roster? Like, I know Mayshak at times has ran backup point, especially, you know, 2 years ago when Zakai got hurt, Mayshak kind of stepped into that role as a backup, especially. Is maybe that what Tennessee is saying here? Is they're looking around saying, wait, we kind of forgot DeLeon's gone, and, like, you know, Josiah ran some point forward, and so did Dalton at times. Like, we don't really have enough playmakers now. We need to look at somebody that can maybe give us that.
It might be, because it's a good point. There were a few times where Ganey played the point, and I always liken that to when I watch my kids driving a car for the first time. It's like you're just kind of holding your breath. We really don't want that to be a backup alternative. So maybe there is just the discovery that, the one person we're not thinking about, although it seems like it's hard for freshmen to crack the rotation, is – we know Bishop Boswell's not necessarily a point guard, but could he have some of the skills to maybe back up Zakai?
Do we actually think he's going to play?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know. It just depends. It's really hard for those guys to get in the rotation.
You know, Gale's numbers don't suggest that he is, like, a good point guard, just because, I mean, only 3.1 assists per game. But, like, looking through the game log, he did have a couple where he had 8 and 7 and, like, showed that he could, you know, do some of those things. Obviously, I didn't watch Ohio State plays Central Michigan, but he had 7 assists in that game. Like, I don't know.
It's a tough one for me because I watch my share of Big Ten basketball, and I don't remember him at all.
Okay.
So,
well, that's what his numbers look like, that you wouldn't remember him, especially on a forgettable team. So, that doesn't necessarily surprise me, but not, of course, the best glowing endorsement, because you want players that stand out.
Yes.
Either through effort. Like, not always just, like, looks and size, but, like, effort – and impact. Like, you want to be like, oh yeah, Because like, if you watch Tennessee play and when Mayshak's on the court, his numbers aren't going to stand out, but everyone watching the game says, oh, this guy's a dog defensively. He stands out.
Right.
Kind of same for Josiah. Like, oh, wow, this guy does a lot of good things. He stands out. What else happened in college basketball over the weekend? I see that you have a couple of names entering the NBA draft. A guy, I'm not surprised when you look at, you know, his star rating and where he played and, you know, his first 2 years and where he's projected in the mock drafts. But I'm a little disappointed to see Kyle Filipowski enter his name in the draft just because I thought that maybe he was going to be the face of college basketball next year in terms of returning stars and just kind of be that finally like that Duke hated guy that's hung around for a couple of years and now it looks like he's testing the waters and he's been projected at times to be a top 10 pick.
Yeah, and he was close to swinging that way last season, it sounded like. So I guess I'm not surprised. You're right, he could have come back as kind of the preeminent player in the game. But he went, or is declared, I should say, Donovan Klingon, too, which that might be one where optimizing his value right now. He's I still – obviously, as a rim protector and things like that, I think he, you know, he could log some minutes in the NBA. I just – you know, it's interesting that all of a sudden he's entered the lottery discussion, which to me feels a little oversold, in my opinion, but – we're going to find out now, it sounds like.
Back-to-back champion. What else do you got to prove if you're coming in? Yeah, just test it out now. I see him as high as number 6 on this NBA.com/Bleacher Report collab. They have Klingon at number 6.
I would not be excited if I was an NBA team, if I was an NBA fan of the team that picks him at 6.
I think that's a part of the problem is that, like, I don't think you're going to be excited about drafting almost any of these guys this year in the NBA draft. Connect number 8 to the Utah Jazz.
He's got to get to Memphis, man. That would be the best scenario.
Atlanta.
Or Atlanta.
It's a closer drive. If you want to go watch him play, I'd drive all the way across the state or just 2.5 hours down the road. I don't know. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, I would – hate if he ended up in Utah because the jokes would write themselves. I don't want him to get put in the white basketball player box.
Yeah.
But if he goes to Utah, like the Gordon Hayward comparisons, he's not going to be able to shake them. He's not going to be able to beat the allegations in Utah of being the next Gordon Hayward, which isn't a bad thing. You know, that's a guy that, you know, we've compared him to at times this year. But yeah, I don't want to see him in Utah.
I think Duke's got. Back to Duke for a second. They've got another good recruiting class coming in, but you know they lost. So they've lost Filipowski. Jared McCain also declared as well. Mark Mitchell went into the transfer portal. So they're turning some. It's unusual for Duke, honestly. They're turning a lot of players over.
With them kind of losing Filipowski, with Shad hitting the draft as well from Houston. If those guys stay and Klingon's gone too, who's the biggest returning star in college basketball next year? Let's assume Reed Shepard hits the draft too. How far down the list do you have to get before you get to Zakai?
I don't know, but if we're getting to Zakai, and I love Zakai, but that's a problem.
Well, maybe you don't get down to him. I don't know. I was just wondering how far you had to get down the list, like in terms of returning players. I mean, Ballo, you know, I guess if he ends up somewhere and. Dante, is he back at Oregon? I mean, those are good players. I don't know if they're necessarily stars. Like,
yeah. Man. Yeah, I'm struggling to think of one, honestly.
You guys are my college basketball experts.
Well, I think
– fat boy from Indiana State, he ain't going to be the face of the league. So, like –
Well, it depends if the one guy we haven't talked about and we don't know his intention yet, the guy with a ton of upside at Connecticut, Stephon Castle. If he comes back, he would definitely be a preseason All-American. But player of the year, that's a tough one. Kind of underscores where we're at with college basketball right now with transfer portal, all this stuff. Hunter Dickinson, I guess. I mean, he's a name. He disappointed, I felt, this past season.
Is he still around?
They're saying he's eligible to come back.
Oh, God. Go start your career. Go find a job. Just go overseas, learn Chinese, buddy.
You know, really, there'll be a lot of eyes on Cooper Flagg going to Duke.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be heavy to say he would be the face of college basketball, but I'm telling you, there's going to be crazy hype around him.
No, I don't think it's crazy. I could see, I don't want to say the full-on Zion effect, but because, you know, the Zion effect was also related to them having, like, you know, three of the top five recruits or whatever it was with Reddish and RJ Barrett, but and the dunks with Zion and all that. But I think Flagg will definitely be the biggest star in college basketball next year. But just thinking about Zakai, like, if Shedd is gone, is it crazy to say that Zakai is going to be a preseason All-American at point guard? Is that crazy to say?
Maybe. Maybe it's a thing. Maybe it's real. Yeah. I don't know.
Feels weird for me to be the one overrating him because I've been a little bit critical at times, but I do feel like, you know, just when you have 4 years of a guy in college basketball, it's so rare and so unique that there's not a lot of guys that are going to fit that bill at a big program that can also play at a high level. So I do think Zakai's going to be one of the stars of college basketball next year. Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three of winners and losers of the weekend. NBA playoffs. We got some matchup set. We'll dive into that. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to